Hi, Grace.
Hey, Quinn.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm okay. I was listening to a podcast on Stranger Danger today. It was really interesting.
Any tips you'd like to share?
Basically, we haven't gotten quite there yet. They're kind of in the introduction. It's just basically about how it got way blown out of proportion. Yeah, and then also urban legends, but like American ones, but like, you know, like the razor blades and the apples on Halloween and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like how that's never actually really happened and isn't true. So, yeah, it's just, it's Mother's Day. I don't know if we have any mothers that listen to our podcast. But if you do, yeah, or if you are a mother and you're listening, happy Mother's Day. I mean, if you're in like the UK, their Mother's Day is in like March, but happy Mother's Day anyways.
Happy Mother's Day, everyone.
I saw some girl on TikTok that was so confused that everyone was like, happy Mother's Day. And she was like, Mother's Day was like 2 months ago. I already bought my mom presents. Oh, people.
Love that.
Yeah. And that rocket didn't land on my house. So
I was very glad. I saw that on TikTok. Like, I saw I found out about that through TikTok.
Same.
Just one video.
Oh, I saw like seven. And then I kept seeing ones of people like pretending to like seduce the rocket so it would land on their house.
My God.
Yeah.
Well, we're okay.
People are fun. And there was like, I think there was like a NASA scientist that was like talking about it. It landed in the middle of the Indian Ocean. I don't think that anyone that listens to our podcast is hurt from it. It's okay. Okay. Yeah. How was Canadian history after World War One?
I have something due today that I have not done.
Fun. I don't really understand why they call it after World War One, since it starts at, like, before the 1900s began, technically, but whatever. Do what you want, Board of Education. I'll stay out of it. They wanted to get rid of World War One altogether from the curriculum.
Why?
Because they're like, they don't need to know about it. It's too old. Miss Matcha was, like, really mad about it. But they didn't, so. They wanted to, like, start at, like, World War II or something.
Oh, well, stand Miss Matcha.
A bit weird. Yeah, she is very proud of herself. I was talking to her about, you know, American. And there's only one textbook that's, like, Canadian that is about American history for, like, our courses, because all the rest of them are all American, obviously. And she's, like, an editor on it or whatever. Like, she's one of, like, the teachers that they use to, like, say if it's good or not. So, big up Miss Matcha. I'm pretty sure she did this, like, 10 years ago. But good job. Yeah. Okay. Welcome to our podcast. I don't know what to say.
Hi.
Welcome to Not So Bloody Mary, the show where we talk about women in history with bad reputations and try to figure out if they deserve them or not. But, I mean, this week is a mini-cast week, so it's not going to be focused on, you know, Mary Tudor, which is who we're doing right now, as much as we normally focus on her. We're going to be talking about the Wyatt Rebellion, which is in, like, 1554-ish. Yeah. And also Elizabeth the First's involvement in it, or lack thereof. It's mostly about the rebellion, though, just because, you know, I'm pretty sure if you searched up Elizabeth Tudor or Elizabeth the First in Apple Podcasts, you would find, like, way too many podcasts. I think she's okay. Yeah. No. There's some, like, stuff in here that just makes me sad because it's May, and, yeah, May is the month. That's the execution of Anne happened, and I'm not going to say it yet because it's kind of spoilery, but, like, there's just a parallel. Well, there's multiple parallels, and it's great.
So great.
Okay, so we kind of, like, left Mary last time, where she had just met Philip and they were about to get married. Yay. But now we're going to take a step back about a few months, you know. Casually, as we do. Grace and I are actually time travelers, in case you didn't know. Yeah, we travel time constantly.
Yes,
yeah, so we already talked about how Mary kind of had like an unhealthy reliance on the emperor and on his ambassador, Simon Renard. You know, since she's the Queen of England, not of Spain, and it's a little weird that she's so reliant on them to help her run her country. Just putting that out there. It's a little weird. I can understand why all the people were like, hold up, I don't want a Spanish, like, king. You're already, like, half Spanish, and you're kind of letting the Spanish help run our country. So, like, babe, no.
Yeah.
Low key. Yeah, so Simon Renard kind of is in Mary's ear a lot. He tells her a lot of things, and she listens to them a lot. I don't know why this man specifically, but, you know, he's the ambassador. She kind of had a thing with Chapuis before, and I don't think it's his immediate replacement, but it is one of his replacements after him. And so I guess that's why, I don't know. But Simon Renard hates Elizabeth. He doesn't like her. He's like, she is terrible. We don't like her. She's too popular. She's too admired. He doesn't like that. He distrusts it. He thinks that Elizabeth is going to try and take over from Mary. Mary, at first, during the early weeks of her reign, appeared in public with Elizabeth in the place of honor at her side. Sometimes they would hold hands, you know, just normal sister things.
Oh, obviously.
You and Ella hold hands all the time when you appear in public.
Totally do.
But, you know, that's like a symbol that, like, she respects Elizabeth and that Elizabeth is, you know, royal. But unfortunately, like all good things, it must come to an end. It's not long before religion drives a wedge between the two sisters. We already talked about this in our last episode a bit, but, you know, Elizabeth doesn't want to go to Mass because she is not Catholic. you know, yeah, I don't want to go to Mass either. Mary is aware of Elizabeth's reluctance to attend Mass. So she's kind of mad about that. But Elizabeth doesn't want to alienate her. She's like, no, you know, got to stay on her good side. Don't want to get my head chopped off. I don't think she's there yet. I don't think she thinks that's really much of an option at the beginning. But Elizabeth is also very cautious of the fact that the majority of her supporters are Protestant. And she's like, well, I can't alienate them. Like, I don't want to get rid of them. They love me, you know?
Yeah.
It's no secret that Elizabeth had really lent into the Reformed faith during Edward's reign, and she still wore a golden book containing her brother's deathbed prayer on her waist. I don't know what that's about. Sounds a little weird to me, but you do you, boo. Whatever you want. Mary is, like, determined to bring Elizabeth back into the Catholic faith, because at the moment, Mary isn't married, so she doesn't have any children. And Elizabeth is the heir to the throne. So it's unthinkable to her that her heir would be a Protestant. That's a big no-no. Because, yes, you know,
big no-no.
She would continue the Reformation. What the heck? By the end of August, so let's remember that Mary got onto the throne in, like, July, June. I don't like. It's like the beginning of summer and it is only August and all the old antagonism between the two of them has resurfaced.
Oh my.
Didn't take very long. They had never had an easy relationship because of the past, you know, once Elizabeth got old enough to talk, I think things weren't great, but religion was driving the final wedge between them. Seeing this, the French ambassador began to court Elizabeth's favor. But she responded favorably to. She likes the French. She's chill with them. You know, the Spanish don't like her, so obviously she's gonna go to the French, right? Like,
yeah.
What? That makes sense. Renard is like, oh my gosh, no, this is not happening. So he warns the queen that her sister was a heretic who was intriguing with the French. And he told Mary that Elizabeth's popularity was a threat to Mary's security. Yeah, so He's stirring the pot. This Renard man, you know, he's really,
like, dang.
He's really into this. Mary told Renard, so she's like, I hear you. I see you. I hear you. Here's the thing. Despite my public behavior and my sincere attempts to, like, try and nurture some affection, I find it impossible to hide my dislike for the daughter of a woman who my mother had always referred to as a concubine. She's like, I can't do it. Every time she looked at Elizabeth, she remembered Anne Boleyn, and she remembered the misery that she had caused her. she would take Renard's advice and she would keep an eye on her. So, you know, thanks, Anne. Gosh. Elizabeth is like, seriously, Mom? Yeah, so basically, because of Anne, it's, I'm sure there's other things, you know, religion is not helping. But Mary looks at Elizabeth and she sees Anne and she's like, I can't do it. Not happening. So the ambassador then tries to push his luck a little bit more. And he told Mary once again to have Jane Grey executed, but she would not hear of it. She's like, no, that's not happening. Jane and her husband are going to stay in the tower until it is safe for me to grant them pardons and me to release them. She doesn't want to kill them. They're like 15-year-old kids. She's not for that, you know? She also recognizes the fact that Jane was not the one who came up with this plot. Jane didn't want to replace Mary. Like, she wasn't like, hey, Dad, let's come up with a plot so that I can get on the throne. That's not what happened. She was a puppet for a bunch of men and, you know, her mom, maybe, to put her on the throne.
Poor girl.
Yeah. When Edward was buried, Mary held two services. One in Westminster, a Protestant service, you know, the public one. Because Edward was Protestant. Can you imagine if she buried him in the Catholic faith?
Like, dang.
Ooh, he would have been pissed. Jane Seymour probably would have been like, thank you, Mary. Thank you. Jane from beyond the grave. And then she also held another one in her private chapel. And it was a requiem mass, which I assume is a Catholic service since it's a mass. Elizabeth didn't go to either. I don't know why. Like, maybe she wasn't allowed to go to the public one because you're not. I don't think she's important enough for her to not have to attend it, though. So,
yeah.
Maybe she's just like, well, I can't go to the Protestant one, apparently, and I don't want to go to the Catholic one. So, we're just not having it, guys. She is carrying Edward's deathbed poem, prayer, or whatever, around her waist. So, she's like, I did my part. When Mary decided that she was going to marry Philip, the French ambassador had already anticipated this would happen. He warned his king that this marriage would not be good for all of Christendom. Christendom is just like, you know, a bunch of white men. And now Mary, she's part of it now. So good job, Mary, breaking that gender barrier, but doing literally everything else negatively. So, wow. I'm getting Instagram notifications. Instagram's trying to get me to follow people that I don't want to follow. The French ambassador said that he would do everything in his power to promote the match with Courtenay for Mary or the claim of the Lady Elizabeth. So Courtenay is, oh my gosh, it's Edward, I believe. And he is like a grandson of one of the York sisters, I think. He might be a great-grandson. His family was like in the tower. His parents were like the Exeter people that hated Anne and were part of that like group to like get rid of her and replace her with Jane. Yeah. He has Plantagenet blood, so he has a claim. So a lot of the English dudes want him to marry Mary so that, like, you know, then Mary's kids have an even stronger claim to the throne. And then Courtenay's kind of taken care of so that he can't rebel against her. But Mary is like, nah, we're not doing that. I don't want to marry him. So thanks a lot, Mary. Courtenay's also like 25 and she's like 30 something. But Philip is also like 25. So she doesn't mind younger dudes. This is really, the voice to text really went a little crazy here. Beginning shortly after Mary ascended the throne, Catholic reform began to spread. A number of Protestant priests defied the royal edict banning preaching and were therefore arrested, as they do, you know. If you're going to break laws, you get arrested. Reformist printers had their presses confiscated, and many people feared that the old anti-heresy laws would be revived. Consequently, there began a steady stream of around 800 Protestants leaving to go to the continent because, you know, England's an island. So everyone's going to, like, France and Spain, but not actually there. Probably, like, Germany and stuff because they're more tolerant. Initially, the government made no effort to stop them from going. So they're like, bye. We don't want you either. One of the people who left that year was actually Catherine Carey, who Mary Boleyn's daughter, who was the wife of Sir Francis Knollys and the first cousin to Elizabeth. You know, low key. Catherine has a kid named Lettice. So that's just a name and a half. Yeah, but Lettice is in Elizabeth's court when Elizabeth is queen. So evidently Lettice stayed. I don't know. But Catherine Carey is the one that most historians believe that if one of Mary Boleyn's children was Henry VIII's, it was Catherine. So she could have been both first cousin and half-sibling to Elizabeth.
I see.
Yes. Let that sink in just for a hot second. After she left, Elizabeth wrote to her, "The length of time and distance of place separates not the love of friends. My power but small, my love as great as them whose gifts may tell their friendship's tale." So she's going to miss her. They're pretty close. I don't think Catherine is that much older than her. Like, she might be, like, I think she's less than 10 years older than her, but definitely more than 5. So, you know, not that far apart now that they're, like, 19 and, like, 30.
Yeah.
So, yeah. At the end of August, Renard reported that Elizabeth was showing a more than friendly interest in Courtenay. Yeah. And from that time onwards, her name was linked to his, and with their, like, Plantagenet and Tudor blood, they kind of stood as youthful and charismatic figureheads for both Catholic and Protestant subjects of the queen who were kind of mad at her, and people thought that they might overthrow Mary.
Ah.
Fun. Many people now believed that Edward Courtenay would become king consort, and they flocked to pay court to him. But, you know, he's a young man, and he did what a lot of young men do when they get attention. He became annoying. Before long, he was giving himself airs, and he became insufferable. He literally announced that at Mary's coronation, he was going to be wearing a suit of blue velvet with gold embroidery. When his words were reported to Mary, she sent him a message informing him that she herself was going to be wearing blue velvet trimmed with ermine to the coronation, and so he needed to choose a new outfit. You can't wear that. I'm wearing that. By the beginning of September, Mary was becoming increasingly less tolerant of those who persisted in what she regarded as heresy. This included becoming increasingly angry with Elizabeth for failing to attend Mass on the regular. Oh, Elizabeth. Sometimes, my dear, we just need to compromise. I don't think she has those bones in her body sometimes.
Probably not.
Let's look at her parents. Elizabeth also failed to respond to Mary's heavy hints that she should abandon the plain clothes she favored to please the Protestants in favor of magnificent gowns like Mary's own. Let's be totally clear here. Once Elizabeth becomes queen, she doesn't care about plain clothes in order to please the Protestants. She wears whatever the heck she wants, and most of it is very expensive. Yeah, she kind of goes a little whack. She likes the fashion, like her mother. Sure, that didn't help. Yeah. It was clear to Elizabeth that some kind of compromise was needed. I think that she needed to figure this out. That is, like, the number one thing that my parents used to say to me. Need to compromise.
Oh my God.
I used to, like, despise that word. Everyone with siblings knows that word because your parents are always like, compromise.
I know. Oh, my God.
Like, no. He took my toy. I want it back. Because even though she wanted to remain a beacon of hope for her Protestant subjects, she also didn't dare risk making Mary mad at her. So therefore, she requested an audience with the queen. She's like, can I talk to my sister, please? I have to formally request this, so can I talk to her? In the meantime, Renard had been, like, poisoning Mary's mind with being, like, really suspicious of Elizabeth. He had never trusted her because he literally believed she was in league with a burgeoning opposition of heretics and dissidents led by the French ambassador. So he hates her. Mary shared his suspicions that Elizabeth was a reformer and would rise up against Mary, but she wouldn't agree to put Elizabeth in the Tower. The most important thing to her was that Elizabeth submitted to the Catholic faith because she didn't want her heir to be a heretic. You know, as you do. She protested to Renard that it would burden her conscience too heavily to allow Elizabeth to succeed. Yeah, these people and their consciences, like, actually, every time I read it, I want to, like, choke them a little bit.
Like, they say conscience so many times.
When I was typing this out and I was watching Suits with my mom and I read it, I was like, oh my god. And my mom was like, what? Like, they're talking about their consciences again. She was like, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. It's just annoying. Like, yeah. I mean, it is like a church word, though. So, like, maybe that's why they talk about it so much. Because, you know, it's a church word and they're all church people. Also, Elizabeth was, here's a quote from Mary, the offspring of one whose good fame he might have heard and who had received her punishment, end quote.
Dang.
Hey, Mary, she's letting all of her anger towards Anne out in, like, this first part of this episode.
Jeez.
Yeah, Anne has received her punishment. As for Elizabeth's paternity, so her father, Mary often claimed not to believe that Elizabeth was Henry VIII's child, but instead the result of the affair between Anne Boleyn and Mark Smeaton. She told Jane Dormer many times that Elizabeth had his face and his bearing.
Oh my.
I don't know what Mark Smeaton looks like. I don't think he has a portrait because he was literally like some random like musician who wasn't even like, Anne Boleyn talked to him like 2 times ever in her life. So I don't think he has a portrait, but I'm pretty sure that if you put like the, you know, like the Facetune app or whatever, that you can like put the two pictures together and create their child.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Elizabeth would be what was created from Henry and Anne. She looks literally just like both of them.
Love
like,
it.
In order to eliminate any possibility that Elizabeth would succeed her, it was imperative that Mary marry and produce an heir. Then she had her coronation. We already talked about her coronation, so I'm not going to talk about it. Just know that it happened, and it was probably really great for her. Then Mary was like, you know what has been literally my least favorite thing that has ever happened to me in my entire life? The fact that my dad said that my mom lied. She passed an act of restitution, which declared that Henry VIII's annulment of his marriage to Catherine of Aragon had been invalid, and therefore Mary was legitimate. I love how Henry had to be like, okay, so this thing is actually invalid, so therefore our marriage is invalid, and therefore Catherine is not my wife. And Mary was like, no, that thing was valid, so your thing was invalid, so actually... y'all were married. Like, she had to do some serious gymnastics over here. Therefore, Mary was legitimate, right? So she's like, woohoo, we're doing it. But Elizabeth was still heiress under the terms of Henry's will. Oh no. Mary actually asked Renard's friend Paget if it would be possible to disinherit her sister. But he warned her that Parliament would never agree to it.
Love that.
The people really, really like Elizabeth. She's like, in the Young Elizabeth book, they called her England's Elizabeth. And I'm pretty sure it was like an actual quote from someone that they're like, she's England's Elizabeth. You know, like if it was today and they're doing like elections, her slogan would be like England's Elizabeth. And all people would be like, she's ours. She's here for us.
Oh, gosh.
When England and London in particular found out about the betrothal to Philip, they were very, very upset. There were some concerns for the people in charge that Elizabeth would be preferred to Mary. Renard told Mary that she needed to neutralize Elizabeth, either by putting her in the Tower or by treating her with the courtesy shown to the heir to the throne. He's like, you can't just treat her like she's hanging in limbo. You either need to get rid of her or you need to be nice to her. And Mary's like, I can't do that. That's not going to work. She still won't put her in the Tower. She doesn't want to do that. She's like, that's not okay. But she's nearly as reluctant to show her friendship. It's not that hard, Mary. Just be fake. Oh, my God. Like, Renard explained in a letter to the Emperor that she still resents the injuries inflicted on Queen Catherine, her lady mother, by the machinations of Anne Boleyn.
Oh, my.
Like, Mary, it has been 20 years since Elizabeth was born. It has been 20 years since you were declared a bastard. You need to let it go. but she can't. She just can't do it. She says, I'm sorry, that's just not happening. Yeah, so nasty.
It's against her conscience.
It's against my conscience. On November 14th, 1553, Lady Jane Grey, Guildford Dudley, and his brothers, and Archbishop Cranmer, were all tried at the Guildhall in London on charges of high treason. All of the accused pled guilty, and all of them were condemned to death. However, Mary didn't have any intention of having the sentences actually carried out. She wanted the prisoners to remain in the Tower, and when the time was right, she would release them. She's just doing this for a show, you know?
Yeah.
She's got to look like she's got it going on. Yeah. Then everything kind of changed. R.I.P. Oh. On November 26th, my cousin's birthday, 1553, not my cousin's birthday. Her birthday's in 2011. A group of conspirators met in London to plot rebellion. Their leader was a Kentish knight, Thomas Wyatt, whose father had been the famous poet, diplomat, and one-time kind of suitor of Anne Boleyn. What? That's like a tie-in to our first episode. Thomas Wyatt Jr., we know your dad. Wyatt Jr. was a hot-headed man, a former soldier, and a staunch Catholic who had risen on Mary's behalf back in July, but he had traveled a bit in Spain and hated Spaniards. So he doesn't want Philip to come, in case you didn't gather that. He got with him a group of men who were preventing the queen by force from marrying Philip of Spain, among whom was de Noailles, who was the French ambassador, who had agreed to ask his master for aid. It seems with the evidence given that Wyatt himself intended just to prevent the marriage, there isn't any clear proof that he actually wanted to get rid of Mary and make Elizabeth and Courtenay king and queen in her place, which was the objective of the French ambassador and is what would, like, most people believe that was his objective, but it definitely wasn't, like, at the beginning. Wyatt definitely did inform Courtenay about his plans, and he also wrote to Elizabeth hoping to gain her support. Courtenay was willing to join the plotters. He's like, oh, all right, yeah, dude, let's go. I feel like he's kind of frat boy, like, I don't know. I feel like that's just his vibe. And it was decided that just before Philip's arrival in England, which would be around the middle of March, Courtenay would visit his estates in Devon and join forces with Peter Carey to orchestrate an uprising in the West. Wait, was Courtenay, like, his dad, was he the, like, gay guy that died in the Tudors? I need to figure this out. Yeah. I think maybe. He was. Oh my god.
You're it's trying to get me to until you find that out.
I'm searching up right now. I think they tried to get me to figure out Courtney Cox. Oh. Henry Courtney. William Courtney? I think it was William. I should search
you're
up
not
those
resting till you find
those me. Gay guys that do.
Did you search that up? Who were the gay guys in the Tudors?
Yes, I did.
I love that.
I got an article that says the Tudors, Randy Royals, and gay action too. No, it's William Compton. Oh. No, so sad. There was some gay cruising going on in those musky Tudor hallways. Oh my god, I can't. Okay, I'm sorry. The fact that they just added in, like, a random gay subplot and then killed off both of them. That's well, actually, they didn't. They didn't kill Thomas. He was just, like, sent to France and never came back.
That's just what happens to gay.
And then they set up a gay subplot with George Boleyn and Mark Speaton, and they both also died. So, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Fun. The government, let's go back, was already anticipating some sort of conspiracy, and its officers were, like, ready and watchful. When in late November, Elizabeth begged for permission to leave court and go to Ashridge, the Queen agreed reluctantly, but she sent officials to warn Elizabeth that if she persisted in concerning herself with French and heretical conspiracies, she would regret it.
Mm.
Is that a threat, Mary?
Okay.
Elizabeth protested that she would never conspire against the queen, but Mary was still distrustful, and she ordered spies in Elizabeth's household to watch her every move. Fun.
Oh.
Yay.
Okay.
Elizabeth left court on December 6th. De Noailles reported that when the sisters bade each other farewell, they were completely reconciled, but Renard knew better because he told Mary to make a false show of affection upon parting. He's like, just pretend, oh. Mary. God damn it. Oh, Mary. Causing us trouble. It was natural that Denoyle's wallet and Wyatt, and every Protestant in England would look to Elizabeth as the natural focus of opposition against the Spanish marriage, but she was way too smart to involve herself in any conspiracy against the Queen. She knew that her enemies would, like, jump on her to get her condemned for treason, and she had no intention of giving them that happiness. Nah.
Yeah. No.
Mary had decided to wait until she was actually married and had produced a Catholic heir before she pardoned Lady Jane Grey and set her free. Literally none of those things are going to happen except for the fact that Mary will get married. Yeah. Despite remaining under sentence of death, Jane was well treated in the Tower. In December, however, protests against the Spanish marriage were becoming more widespread and fears of uprisings were, you know, sharpened. And so Jane was no longer allowed her daily walk.
Poor Jane.
R.I.P. She was, like, obsessed with, like, praying, so I feel like she didn't need it as much as some other people might. But, you know, daily walk is still pretty important. They did this because the council believed that either she or Elizabeth would be made the focus of a rebellion. And so, like, they have to hide her away so that people don't see her. Mm. Casual. Renard's spies soon heard rumors that trouble was, like, you know, coming, but they couldn't actually find any hard evidence. The whispers had it that some Englishmen were trying to get Elizabeth or Courtenay to act as their leader, but Elizabeth was too clever to agree. She would never admit that she had been in contact with Wyatt, but around Christmas, she began summoning her tenants to come armed to protect her from her enemies. Renard was convinced she was planning something. Elizabeth, my dad, like, what are we doing here? It's okay. Oh, she's protecting herself. She's fine. We will probably never know just how much Elizabeth actually knew of the plot. One of the conspirators, Pickering, was her friend. And they had a private conversation in her room lasting 2 hours at the end of October. I feel like that doesn't mean her actual bedroom. It means, like, just one of her rooms, because that's, like, a random man in her room for 2 hours. And I feel like people would have said she slept with him if he was in her actual room.
Yeah.
I also feel like that wouldn't have been allowed.
Yeah, probably not.
I'm just saying, you know. Denoyles, who was himself involved in the conspiracy, claimed she was strongly familiar with Sir James Crofts, who had visited her at Ashridge actually that month, and told him that as soon as the rebellion began, Elizabeth intended to move out of Mary's reach to avoid being taken hostage. This is the point where I started to get bored of writing Elizabeth in the doc, because it's a really long name. So I just have EL a lot, because, you know, that's what I call her a ton of time when we're just talking. So that's just what she's written as here, but I will keep saying Elizabeth so that people aren't confused. Crofts also told him that Elizabeth, gosh, sorry guys, definitely not a purposeful mistake, had hopes of the crown, especially if the matters undertaken for her come to a successful end. However, it's probably true that Crofts was making this up to gain French support. There's no proof that Elizabeth ever did anything to encourage or help the conspirators, and there also isn't any evidence that she ever sent any communication that could be treasonable to them. Shortly, a lot of people are going to try and find some, but they were very unsuccessful, much to their chagrin. What is likely is that Elizabeth knew of Wyatt's plans, because he told her, but was waiting upon events and was simply taking measures to protect herself, because, you know, things could happen.
Yeah.
At the beginning of January, the council was like, oh, crap, because they found incriminating letters written by Wyatt and the French ambassador. And by the 2nd of January, they knew that they had to deal with a massive rebellion. Worse still, though, for Elizabeth, the ambassador's letter implied that she was involved and knew of the plot. It also claimed that she had left Ashridge and moved to another one of her houses, where she had already assembled her supporters, even though the council knew that that was incorrect. They're like, what? This is just so fun. So fun. At the same time, there were reports that Sir Peter Carew was inciting the people of Exeter to rise against Mary by preying on their fears of Spain. He was immediately summoned to London, and when Courtenay heard a warrant had been drawn up for Carew's arrest, he panicked because he knew it was probable that he would be implicated. He just sounds really, like, not that fun.
Honestly, yeah.
He said, I'm kind of like a coward, but things are going to happen in a second that are going to make that even more true. On January 9th, 1554, the marriage treaty between Philip and Mary was finished, and on January 18th, government troops occupied Exeter and therefore ended the possibility of the revolt in the West. On that day, Renard divulged all that he knew about the conspiracies to the Queen. Cross was now head for the Welsh border, and Suffolk, that's Jane Grey's dad, was keeping a low profile at Sheen. Wyatt was raising the men of Kent from his base at Allington Castle, and by the 19th of January, 30 men had joined him. That's not that many. Caro had managed to evade arrest, and he said that he would, to let it be known, that he would throw the next delegation of Spaniards into the sea. Okay. You can do that. Go ahead. But, you know, Courtenay's a bit of a coward, so he betrays everyone because he's fearful of his own skin. Not everyone, but he betrays them. Oh. Renard had confided his suspicions of Courtenay to Mary, who in turn had spoken of them to Gardiner, the Bishop of, oh God, I don't know, he's Lord Chancellor. The Chancellor, who looked upon Courtenay as a son, I don't know why, and wanted to save him, summoned him to Winchester House on the 21st of January and questioned him closely as to his involvement in the rumored conspiracy. He broke down and confessed everything.
Of course.
He would not be good if they actually had, like, really, really deep secrets that were going to, like, hurt him. I mean, this is a pretty big secret, but he's okay. Gardiner hastened to tell the council everything, although he did conceal the extent of Edward's involvement. Courtenay was now at pains to confess his loyalty to Mary, and he told Gardiner that he would rather go back to the Tower than marry Elizabeth. Okay.
Oh.
She's supposed to be really pretty, so I feel like you should want to marry her, but he's like, no, I don't want to marry her. Don't throw me into the Tower, please. Don't kill me. On January 22nd, Sir James Crofts, alerted by messenger, turned and rode back to Ashridge, where he tried to persuade Elizabeth to move to her castle at Donnington, which was isolated and well fortified. But unfortunately, for Elizabeth and for him, she was very, very sick. I mean, it's also good, though, because then she can't actually, like, do anything. She was ill with nephritis. Her body was swollen and her head and arms ached. She refused to move. She's like, no, I'm not doing that. Sorry, not happening. So Crofts had to leave her and go back the way that he had come. Wyatt also tried to get her to move, but she sent him a message saying she did thank him much for his goodwill and she would do as she would see cause, which means no, sorry, go away. Leave me be. By January 23rd, the government had raised 8,000 men. That day, Wyatt visited Suffolk at Sheen, and he was promised the Duke's support on the condition that Wyatt would get rid of Mary and place Jane Grey on the throne. So now we are trying to get rid of Mary. We have now hit that point. On January 25th, the conspirators rose as planned, but they didn't have very exciting results for themselves. Without Courtenay as a figurehead, the people of the West were unwilling to rise, and so Sir Peter Carew had to flee to France, disguised as a servant. Suffolk tried to take Leicester with 150 men, but he was successfully resisted, so that sucks for him. Leicester is Mr. Leicester's last name. So I think that Mr. Leicester, that is where he is. He's actually online teaching right now, so I haven't seen him. That was a random side note, but Mr. Leicester, if you're listening, I miss you. You're pretty great. He then withdrew to Coventry, only to find its gates were closed against him. By then, his few supporters had actually abandoned him, and he was forced to, stop. R.I.P. R.I.P. that. Hey! I hate him, so it's fine. It was Wyatt who posed the most sincere threat. When he raised his standard at Maidstone and issued a proclamation protesting against the Spanish marriage, his army was 3,000 to 4,000 strong. Soon he was riding at the head of 5,000 rebels towards London, unopposed because the authorities actually couldn't rally any support in the area. Oh. Like, what? No one would fight for them. That's so sad. Soon Rochester Bridge and a fleet of royal ships anchored in the Medway had fallen to him, which meant that they gave him vital arms. The Londoners, who had received exaggerated reports of the size of the rebel army, were, like, really terrified. Yeah, so that's not fun. Let's not terrify innocent civilians. That's, you know, we don't do that, guys. Gardiner now heard that Elizabeth was either setting Ashridge up against a siege or was moving to Donnington Castle. On January 26th, Henry's birthday. Not Henry VIII. Screw him. It's our Henry. Mary, eager to have Elizabeth in a place where she could keep her eye on her, asked her to come hither. I love that word. Come hither, Elizabeth. Sounds like she's in trouble. A verbal message came back. The princess was too ill to travel. She had a bad cold and a headache. Of course, Mary didn't believe her. I feel like Mary should be the last person to get mad at people for being sick, since Miss Girl used to be like, I'm sick. I'm sick. Like, it was kind of her thing. So
I'm sick.
I can't. I'm sick. Do you want to do something fun? Do you want to go to Taco Bell? Can't go to Taco Bell here. I can't do this. Okay. Anyways.
Mean Girl reference over.
Boo, you whore. Not you, Grace.
Thanks. Love you.
Mary interpreted Elizabeth's reluctance to come to court as evidence that she herself was involved in the conspiracy. this suspicion appeared to be confirmed when the French ambassador's post bag was seized and Elizabeth's last letter to the queen was actually found in it. Mary and Gardiner concluded that that meant that Elizabeth had sent the ambassador a copy and that meant that she was secretly in league with the French. It's not like Mary's not in league with the Spanish, so, pot kettle black. Renard was convinced that Gardiner had deliberately suppressed another letter containing indisputable evidence that Courtenay and Elizabeth were plotting to overthrow Mary, but he was unable to find literally any evidence of this letter.
Oh, my.
R.I.P. to Renard. He tried really hard, you guys. Mary then does the 16th century equivalent of ordering, well, not ordering, because, you know, we don't have people to order around for most people anymore, of deleting every single picture of your ex off your Instagram. because she literally ordered them to take Elizabeth's portrait out of her gallery.
Oh.
I think that's, like, the most extra thing ever. Like, what? Take it down. Take it down right now. I don't want to see it. I don't want to look at her. I don't want to even think about her.
Oh, my.
Yeah. However, both of them were so overtaken by the events of the next 2 weeks that they didn't have any more time to inquire into Elizabeth's activities. Elizabeth gets to be sick in peace. Good. On January 25th, the council had Suffolk, Carew, and and Wyatt proclaimed traitors in London for having raised certain evil-disposed persons to her grace's destruction and to advance the Lady Jane and Guildford Dudley. On January 27th, the Queen dispatched Norfolk into Kent to suppress Wyatt's rebels. I would like to say I'm pretty sure he's, like, over 80. So I don't know why we're sending him to lead armies.
Dang.
Yeah, that didn't go well. What? No. And when his remaining troops came back to London, Mary was mad because she now realized that she faced a crisis. Nothing is standing between Wyatt and the capital. So he could just, you know, walk in. The council was also aware of the size of the threat, and according to Renard, there were several of them who now considered abandoning Mary and offering their allegiance to Elizabeth. This is not going to help Elizabeth's and Mary's sister, like, problems, you guys. Leave them alone.
Come on. Think of the bigger picture.
Gardiner and others urged the queen to leave London for the safety of Windsor, but she was like, nah, we're not doing that. She gave orders that London should be fortified, and she would remain at Whitehall until the crisis was averted. She remembered how her subjects had welcomed her as their queen, and so she didn't see any reason to doubt in their loyalty now. Some around her were not quite as convinced about this. They're like, you sure? No. Yeah, on January 30th, the Rebel Army arrived at Gravesend. Okay, here's the thing. I don't know where half these places are, but they're all just getting closer and closer to London. I'm sure some British people will know where they are, but not me. At Blackheath, Wyatt commanded Hastings to demand the Queen surrendered her person and surrender the tower to him, but yeah, he was refused, so R.I.P. Wyatt didn't happen. Hastings then rode to London to inform Mary of Wyatt's intentions, which she took as a sign of civil war. The next day, she sent for Renard, who found her very upset because the council had not yet sent her a bodyguard. So she's just kind of, like, chilling without a bodyguard, and she thinks that she needs one, which is probably fair. Because, you know, someone could, like, break in the palace and try and kill her. Even as she spoke, however, London was being carefully guarded. The drawbridge on London Bridge had been raised because Wyatt would have to cross the Thames before he got to the city. So, like, they rose it up so that he couldn't get across the bridge since he's walking. And great guns had been positioned next to it. I'm sure he's not actually walking. I'm sure he has a horse, but, like, it's the principle of the thing. On February 1st, a deputation from the Commons begged the Queen to reconsider her marriage to Philip, which she firmly refused to do. She's like, no, sorry. Although she did reassure them that her marriage would never interfere with the common people. She's like, I just want to get married, you guys. I was supposed to be married at like 12, and I am now like 39. Please shut up. XO, Mary. Yeah, it's almost her birthday, too. Not a fun time for your birthday. Ignoring pleas from her counselors. Okay, there's so many times in this episode where I just feel like Catherine of Aragon is so proud of her. Like, aw. First, there was the whole, like, I hate Anne Boleyn thing. Catherine is just clapping, you know? Yeah. She's like, good job, my child. But now Mary's, like, okay, so this part is reminiscent of Elizabeth's famous, I have, like, the body of a woman, weak and feeble woman, but the heart of a king and a king of England also. That whole thing. That's the famous one. But this speech is pretty much as cool. So, just saying. But I didn't put the whole thing in here because it was like a page and a half long and like tiny writing in my book. And I didn't feel that you guys needed to hear the entire thing. So if you want to hear it, just search it up and, you know, do a dramatic reading of it for your entire family and make them listen to it. Yeah. And if you're not British, do it in a British accent. And if you're British, do it in an American Southern accent.
And if you're American Southern, do it in a British accent.
Just do it in a British accent. Anyone who's not British, do a British accent. Yeah, record it and send it to us. No one actually do that. I don't want to watch your performance. I don't have time. I'm sorry. I have to make a 30-minute presentation.
I'll listen if you want to send it.
Grace, well, listen, you're not connected to any of the social medias directly. I'll send it to you. She ignored pleas from her counselors to consider her safety, and she went in the afternoon fully, you know, decked out in her crown and her robes of state to make a personal appeal to the Londoners. She arrived at Guildhall, where the Lord Mayor, aldermen, and a huge crowd had gathered to hear her speak from the throne. So she talked for a while, and then her speech ended with, "And now, good subjects, pluck up your hearts, and like true men, face up against these rebels, and fear them not, for I assure you, I fear them nothing at all." She's just got that, you know, BDE. Well, actually, it's like BPE, because she's not a man, but...
Yeah.
Big energy. Her speech had the desired effect, as did her obvious courage. The citizens responded, like, really happily. They clapped for her, which tipped the scale of public opinion in Mary's favor. Woohoo! Good job, Mary. She would have won that Legion speech competition. Would have blown it out of the water. She inspired almost the biggest estimate is 25,000 men. The lowest estimate is 20,000, you know. Thomas Wyatt has 7,000 in his army, so she's got like three times as many as he does. To volunteer the next morning to fight against the rebels. So, pop off. Yeah, but the rebel army is now advancing on London. On February 3rd, they paused at Southwark. They were mad because the citizens of London had destroyed London Bridge to keep him from crossing the Thames. Good job, citizens of London. Therefore, he camped on the Surrey shore for 3 days, and he allowed his men to sack the Priory of St. Mary Overy, which is now Southwark Cathedral, and the Bishop of Winchester's palace. That's not very nice.
Oh.
Inside the city, it was really, like, crazy and loud because people were, you know, panicking. They were getting dressed in armor, and they shut down all their shops and their stalls. The Queen's speech was being read out by heralds up and down the streets to inspire the citizens with courage, but many people were still terrified. I mean, fair. I also would be terrified. I'm not down for that. In the Palace of Whitehall, armed guards were packed in Mary's presence chamber while her ladies wept and wailed. But the Queen remained cool. She gave them orders to inform her of every development, and she urged her household to place their trust in God. I would just like to say that this is the moment that Mary, like, Catherine of Aragon is, like, inhabiting her body, so it's just a good job. It's like when Catherine was the regent for Henry when she fought against the Scottish people when she was pregnant, you know, killed her sister-in-law's husband. But, you know, it was a pretty big deal. Mary's advisors wanted the Tower guns fired across the river at the rebels, but she refused to do that in case any of the innocent people of Southwark were struck or killed. Because, you know, that wouldn't look good. It would not be a good PR move to kill innocent people. Just, no. You could get, like, Elizabeth to actually take over for that. Even so, Wyatt was afraid that he was going to get shot by accident and marched his army upriver towards Kingston on the 6th of February. There he crossed the Thames and marched back along the north shore to Knightsbridge and Tyburn, which lay right outside the city walls. Might be Tyburn? I don't know. I'm not British. I'm sorry. When news reached Whitehall of his advance, every single member of the royal household was given arms. So they're all given, like, guns, but sure, some of them got guns, because guns did exist, but I'm going to assume most of them had, like, daggers. Just, you know, fancy little thing to, like, stab someone. There was panic at court, duh, and the council advised the queen to make her escape by river, but she firmly refused. She's like, no, if my people have to be here, I'm going to be here too. At one point, she even expressed a desire to be on the field in person. That is her Catherine of Aragon moment. She's like, bro, I wish I could be fighting. And all the councilors are like, no. She's like, why not? Why can't I do it? Sorry. One of the rebels reached the court gate at Whitehall and actually fired an arrow into the palace precincts, which, you know, made people freak out more. But Mary remained unruffled because she's cool. Wyatt was now making his way along Fleet Street in Ludgate, which was deserted, and he passed by a bunch of locked and shuttered houses. Ludgate, however, remained firmly shut against him, and when he turned to retreat, the way was barred by Pembroke's force, which had followed him and cut off the rest of his army. He was trapped.
R.I.P.
Yeah, so he realized that his supporters were, like, way too few to resist such a large force, and the Londoners were not going to support him at all, so Wyatt gave himself up and the rebellion collapsed. As his followers were rounded up and arrested, he watched from a bench by an inn. By 5, he, too, was on his way to the Tower, where he was imprisoned in the Bell Tower. Just like his dad. Except he dies, so. R.I.P. Yeah. I just really don't understand leading rebellions, like, when you don't really have much of a case. You're just gonna die.
Yeah.
In, like, the 1500s, you know? Like, I get it, like, if the government is, like, really corrupt and they're treating you like crap, but Mary literally hasn't done anything that bad yet.
Yeah.
Also, he's Catholic, so he wouldn't have been affected. He just hates Spanish people. Okay, just a bit weird.
Yeah.
To Mary, this was a sign that God had worked another miracle. But to her counselors, the rebellion was the result of her being overly merciful at her accession to the throne. This time, she needed to harden her heart and show her subjects that she wasn't going to be intimidated. Mary took their advice this time. I think it's especially important for her to do that because she's a female, you know? Because women are supposed to be, like, more kind. Elizabeth did not have this problem. She was fine. She would no longer tolerate heresy in her realm because in her mind it could only lead to plots against her. Renard, who before this had advised caution, now changed his tune and urged her to proceed firmly against all heretics. Oh no. Claire. immediately. Claire. Immediately after Wyatt's arrest, the Queen and Council agreed that leaders of the revolt should be executed as an example to other would-be rebels. Like, obviously, you can't just revolt against people in the 16th century and not expect to be killed. Like, I don't think that's mean, because the death penalty is, like, literally the most common thing for them to do. It's not, but, like, Henry VIII killed, like, 70,000 people. So, I think it's okay. The council and Renard, unfortunately, this is the part I don't like, agreed that she should execute the Lady Jane Grey and her husband, since they were focused for the rebellion, had been condemned, and would prove a thorn in her side for as long as they continued to live. Suffolk had made, Jane's restoration a continuation. Basically, Suffolk said, if I'm going to help you, you got to put my daughter back on the throne. And so her existence might actually jeopardize the Spanish marriage, because Charles V said that he wouldn't let Philip come to England until Jane was removed. I find that kind of funny, since Philip is like 25 and can make his own decisions, but Philip doesn't really want to come, so I guess his dad is in charge. This is also like, you know, a parallel between Mary's grandparents being like, we're not sending our daughter over to England until you kill that boy. R.I.P. to Edward Pole. You were killed for, like, no reason, my dude. I am very sorry. cries.
Cries.
Again. Cries. reluctantly, Mary agreed, and that evening, Renard wrote to inform the Emperor that the execution of Jane and Guildford would be set for 2 days in the future, the 9th of February, but that he was uncertain whether or not it would actually happen, given Her Majesty's foolish notions of clemency. Even as he wrote, however, Mary was signing the death warrants, and later that evening, the condemned couple were told to prepare themselves for their fate. Jane simply said, I am ready and glad to end my woeful days. Yeah, Jane is kind of, like, really extra sometimes, but, you know, just a bit. She's just really Protestant. She's very devoted. The next day, Mary sent the Abbot of Westminster to Jane to offer her a reprieve, so you will not get killed if you convert to if you become a Catholic. She literally will not kill her. And Jane's like, nah.
Dang.
this guy was like a really nice old man. He was super tolerant for his time, and Jane warmed to him even though she like didn't really want to. He asked Mary to postpone the executions for 3 days, so the 12th of February, in order to bring about Jane's conversion after their first meeting. Mary was like, of course, yeah, totally, we can do that. Jane did not ever convert, because she would not. She's like, sorry, I'm not going to condemn myself for eternity in order to live for this life on Earth. No.
Dang.
Yeah, so she's like really firm in her faith, which like honestly, pop off, that's pretty commendable. But I would 100% convert as soon as Mary asked me to. I don't have that strength of will. I'd be like, you want me to, like, do that? We will be doing that. Bye, Protestants. I'm a Catholic now. Although Jane said, no, I'm not converting, and didn't ever convert, she did agree to the abbot's request that he might accompany her to her execution. And then she fell into prayer, which she found a deep comfort in. So, I mean, fair, like, prayer's pretty chill. It's all right. Except for when you're, like, at church and you have to be, like, really quiet. And it's just really awkward. When my brother was in the hospital when I was in, like, grade one or grade two. I don't remember which time it was. My whole church prayed for him and it was really awkward for me.
Oh.
Well, because we have this thing, like, where there's, like, a whiteboard that you can, like, write down people that you want to people to pray for. Because, you know, people like to do that to help. And some people like it when people pray for them. And I was like 7, so I didn't really care. But someone in the congregation wrote my brother's name down. Like, we didn't write it down.
Oh, dang.
Because there was also, like, a time where you could just, like, call out someone that you wanted to be prayed for. And someone was like, Cooper Hammond. And my minister was like, okay, everybody pray for Cooper. So no one could, like, find Jane's dad after, like, the rebellion. He was just missing. But on February 10th, the Earl of Huntingdon found him hiding in a hollow tree in his park. at Astley in Warwickshire. He was just like in a tree. He was then taken to the tower, obviously. Yeah, he was in a tree, so hide and go seek sometimes, you know? It's just gotta happen. Early on February 12th, a panel of matrons came to examine Jane in case she was pregnant, because, you know, if she's pregnant, she's not gonna get executed. They don't kill babies because they're innocent. but she wasn't. That's just really sad for you, Jane. But I don't think she'd ever actually, like, you know, seen her husband since they went to the tower, so.
Would they have, like, killed her after she had her baby, or no?
Well, maybe. The baby wouldn't have been killed, but what probably would have happened is they would have hoped that since she, you know, because that's, like, 9 months, well, maybe more, maybe less, definitely less, because, you know, you can't tell right away, but, like, that gives her time for Mary to feel bad and then not kill her. And so the hope usually if people are discovered pregnant is that, like, they'll be sent off to live with their child somewhere. But, like, that's not ever going to happen because then they'd, like, they'd convert the child to be, like, evil. So then, like, the person probably would die and the kid would be, like, adopted or whatever.
Dang.
Yeah, but Jane's not pregnant, so.
That
didn't happen for her. And so, unfortunately, she died at around 10 o'clock in the morning on February 12th, 1554, at only 16 years old. So, like, she never got to get her G2 driver's license. and I don't like that very much. So that means that she was definitely younger than Catherine Howard when Catherine Howard was executed, because the youngest age that most historians believe Catherine was when she was executed was 17.
I see.
Yeah. So that's not very fun for anyone. But, you know, Mary's now a little bit happier. I don't think she was happy about the fact that she had to kill her little baby cousin. But the rebellion's over. Yay.
Yay.
That's good. Mary and her counselors now had time to consider the behavior of Elizabeth. She's not been behaving very well, but she hasn't. She's literally just been sick. Like, leave her be. And on February 9th, they sent three counselors, Lord William Howard, Sir Edward Hastings, and Sir Thomas Cornwallis, and two royal physicians, Dr. Wendy and Dr. Owen, to Ashridge to determine whether the princess was indeed as sick as she claimed she was. As both queen and council believed that Elizabeth was implicated in the rebellion, the people that came had instructions to bring her to court and Mary's litter if they believed she could be safely moved. From everything I've ever read about them being told that they had to bring her to court and Mary's litter if they believed she could be moved, it was basically like, you're bringing her no matter what.
Yeah.
But, like, they said safely moved to be nice, but, like, the people probably didn't feel that they had an option to not bring her. they examined her and they concluded that she was sick. She wasn't lying about that, but that she would be able to travel to court without harming herself. Elizabeth was kind of, like, genuinely afraid that she was too weak for the journey and pleaded for, you know, an extra few days. She definitely was also trying to use those extra few days, but she probably was, like, a little afraid, yeah, that she was gonna die. But when she was told all excuses needed to be set aside, she agreed to be ready for the 12th of February. She had good cause to fear her arrival in London, for the Queen was coming under pressure that was increasing to deal with her sister just as she had dealt with Lady Jane. Renard repeatedly told Mary that she wouldn't know any peace until Elizabeth and Courtenay were both dead. Gardiner was also pressing her, preaching openly before the entire court that by cutting off its hurtful members, she would be showing mercy to the whole Commonwealth. Yeah, so that's fun. Courtenay was easily gotten. They got him on the charge of treasonable negligence for failing to help prevent Wyatt's hordes from entering London. On February 12th, he was taken to the Tower. On that same day at 9 in the morning, Elizabeth set out from Ashridge. She was very faint and feeble when they took her out of the house, and apparently almost fainted a few times when they were getting her over there. So she's not feeling great. But they eventually got her settled in the litter. The counselors showed her every consideration. They went very slowly and they only covered 6 or 7 miles a day. Even so, she was violently sick several times throughout the journey. 6 or 7 miles a day is so slow.
Dang.
Like, this girl, holy crap, I can run that much in, like, like an hour and a half. Well, probably like 2 hours. I can't run anymore. I'm tired. But, like, what? Yeah, so that's just really not fun for her, since car sickness, apparently. It's not actually car sickness. She's actually sick. It's just probably the litter aggravated it. When she arrived at Whitehall, most of her attendants were dismissed. When she requested an audience with the Queen, she was informed that Her Majesty would not see her until she had been closely examined by the council concerning her recent conduct. For the present, she needed to stay in her apartments, which were actually isolated and heavily guarded. There's also a saying about how the Lady Margaret Douglas, who is Margaret Tudor's daughter, actually, she owned the rooms above Elizabeth's apartments that she had to stay in, and so she turned them into a kitchen so that it would be loud all the time and it would annoy Elizabeth and give her a headache.
Oh.
Yeah, because Margaret was under the impression that if Elizabeth was disposed, then she might become the heir to the throne.
Dang.
Yeah. Well, I mean, her, like, grandson actually became the king, so maybe great-grandson. But someone who was related to her became the kid that was on the throne, James the First. On the 15th of February, Mary informed the emperor that the rebellion had been successfully suppressed. On the 17th of February, Suffolk was attainted and condemned for supporting the rebels, and 6 days later was beheaded on Tower Hill. R.I.P. Not that sad. Meanwhile, the council was trying their very best to find evidence to actually, you know, incriminate Elizabeth, because without proof, they had literally no case against her, because the people would not stand for that. But Renard was confused as to why Mary and her council were so at pains to find direct proof. He said, she has been accused by Wyatt, mentioned by name in the French ambassador's letters, suspected by the councillors, and it is certain that this whole enterprise was undertaken for her sake. Yeah, so... Unfortunately for Renard, he discovered that the English law doesn't give the capital penalty, death, to those who have consented to treason if they have committed no act of treason. So, that sucks for him. Yeah. He's, like, way too involved in this. Like, a little confused, buddy. This isn't your country. Why are you so obsessed with Elizabeth? Mary wanted to have Elizabeth in... She wants her to get her on the charge of treason, but she had to admit that it wouldn't be smart to, you know, begin any criminal proceedings against her. Paget and several others had informed her that to do that might start another rebellion. Then they literally just got out of one. Both the Queen and the Council were convinced of Elizabeth's guilt and debated long and hard what to do with her. By the middle of March, the councillors were bitterly divided in their opinions and unable to find a solution. They're not very good at agreeing. The princess received a visit from the Lord Chancellor and 19 lords of the council, who questioned her closely about her involvement in Wyatt's rebellion. Elizabeth denied that she had not done anything. She's like, I didn't do anything wrong, y'all. I didn't do anything that you could get mad at me for, and I can't ask you for mercy for a crime that I didn't commit. She firmly believed that she only needed to actually see Mary face to face to convince her of her innocence. And so she wanted an audience, but she was informed that Mary was about to leave London and would not be visiting her. They've, like, fully just lost it, you know?
Yeah.
They ain't friends no more. She was informed that it is the Queen's pleasure that you should go to the Tower while the matter is further tried and examined. To her utmost horror, for her, this was the worst punishment that could be devised. Her mother had died there. Her stepmother had died there. Her uncle had died there. Her aunt by marriage had died there. Lots of people had died there that were related to her. And what else could her own imprisonment lead to but a similar fate? On the morning of March 17th, she was informed that a barge was waiting for her to take her to the Tower. They literally were taking her to the Tower without a charge because the council couldn't agree on one.
Oh.
Besties, that doesn't sound like a good way to run your justice system. Whatever, ACAB. Elizabeth was visibly distressed and was ready to try any delaying tactics. She begged them to wait for the next tide, which would give her another day. Yeah, so they're not going to do that. This was denied, as was her plea to see Mary. She was, however, allowed to write her a letter. What's actually cool about this letter, if you like look at it and search it up or whatever, I'm sure there's probably pictures online. I just read copies of it in books. She basically is like, Mary, I didn't do anything wrong. Why are you sending me the Tower? Blah, blah, blah. But she's like really polite about it. And as it gets closer to the end of the letter, her handwriting gets like way more messy because she's rushing to finish it before they take it away. And then at the end. She like finished and there was still space left on the paper. So because if she leaves space on the paper, people can just like fill in things that they wanted her to say. So like someone could literally write, "I committed the crime." And since it was in her letter, they would use that as evidence against her. So she like drew diagonal lines across the whole bottom of the paper to like make sure that no one could write on it. And then she signed it. So good job, Elizabeth. Way to be smart.
Go her.
Her letter actually took so long that the tide passed. And so they did have to wait until the next morning. Dang. She's just honestly an icon sometimes. Yeah, good job, Elizabeth. Then, unfortunately, she is taken to the tower. When she actually, like, when they're going up, they went to a gate. I don't know if it was the gate her mom came in, but she like had a panic attack low key and like sat on the ground or something, and was like, "I'm not going in there, you can't make me go in." They're like, "Well, we have to, so sorry."
Yeah,
I'd like to remind everyone that it's 1554, so she's only 21 years old, so her mind isn't even fully developed yet. She's not fully mature. She was taken to the rooms prepared for her in the bell tower, which were adjacent to the lieutenant's lodging. Throughout her confinement, Elizabeth was treated with respect by Lieutenant Bridges. I think that's a thing that is pretty common. Like when Anne was imprisoned, Mr. Kingston was like real chill to her pretty much. I think that these guys are usually pretty nice. Unless, you know, you did something like really, really terrible. Like kill children or something. Lieutenant Bridges never forgot who Elizabeth was and who she might become. Because if he treated her like crap while she was in the tower, if and when she becomes queen, she's not going to feel very happy about him. You know?
Yeah.
He's thinking ahead. He arranged for her to take her meals in the lieutenant's lodging with him, which might have aroused conflicting feelings in Elizabeth. For it was there that her mother had spent her last days, although the lieutenant's lodging had since been refurbished. But after Anne was convicted of, like, once they were like, "You committed treason," and they turned, like, the axe towards her, she spent her time there instead of in, like, the queen's house or whatever the heck it was called. Just not fun. For recreation, she was allowed to walk along the walls, accompanied by 5 attendants. Another reminder of Anne Boleyn, for the wall walk overlooked Tower Green. So, you know, that's where Anne was beheaded.
Yeah.
So that's real fun for her. There's also a story that, like, little kids, there was a little boy who was, like, 4-ish, I think, and a little girl who we only know the name of. Her name is Susanna. They, like, came and visited her several times at the gates because they were like, "Oh, my gosh, it's a princess." And they gave her flowers, and then those were confiscated, and the children were told that they were not allowed to come visit her anymore. But and they weren't allowed to tell her, and they weren't allowed to ever come back. But the little boy came back, and he was like, "My lady, I am not allowed to come visit you anymore, but I have just come to tell you that." And then, like, left, and she's like, "Okay, bye."
That's so sad.
And apparently the little girl also gave her a miniature keys so that she could, like, escape and go wherever she wanted. But obviously they didn't unlock the gates to the tower. The little girl just gave her, like, keys so that she could go free. I'm sure those were also immediately confiscated, but children being children, you know? By April 3rd, Renard, he's so sad. He's had to resign himself to the fact that the government wouldn't proceed against Elizabeth and Courtenay because they couldn't prove anything against him, and also wasn't likely that any further evidence would come to light. Yeah. Then Wyatt gets executed on my grandma's birthday.
Yay! Oh.
On the 11th of April, and he assured the large crowds that had come to see him that both Elizabeth and Courtenay didn't do anything, like they were not part of it. News of this spread fast among the people, even though the authorities tried to suppress the news, and it made a lot of people really happy because they still really liked Elizabeth and she had a special place in their hearts. The councilors, however, are still fighting over what to do with her. There isn't any justification for keeping her in the tower since, you know, there isn't a charge and she's not guilty. But because the queen was convinced of her guilt, she wouldn't allow Elizabeth to come live at court. This girl, oh my God. Like, chill. And so she demanded that Elizabeth was sent to live in house arrest in the country. I mean, that's better than the Tower.
Dang.
Catherine of Aragon was sent to house arrest in the country. But I don't think Elizabeth went to as trash a house as Catherine of Aragon was sent to. So, at least that was nice. Thanks, Mary. But, you know, Elizabeth probably wouldn't have died if she was sent to a trash house since she was 21. Catherine of Aragon was, like, in her 50s. And also not that healthy. It was eventually decided that Elizabeth would go live at Woodstock in Oxfordshire under the care of Sir Henry Bedingfield. She is not going to partake in a lot of marijuana. It's not that Woodstock. It's just, like, some old house. Under the care of Sir Henry Bedingfield, whose father had been jailer to Catherine of Aragon when she was at Kimbolton. So I guess that's nice. I don't know. Did Mary think that he was nice to Catherine, and so that's why she chose him? Like, I don't know. When Elizabeth was informed of this, she didn't actually know who Sir Henry was, so I guess he's, like, not that important. He's just, like, a rando dude. And so she was really, really afraid that this was simply a plot to get rid of her, and that once they got her far enough away from London, she would be murdered. Yeah. It wasn't. Don't worry. The best thing about this is that I know what's gonna happen, so, like, I know that she lives. I don't have to be afraid that she will be executed since she died in 1603. Yeah. At 1 o'clock, this is the part that's the parallel. On May 19th, 1554, the 18th anniversary of Anne Boleyn's death, Elizabeth got to actually leave the Tower, which was probably a really big deal. She's like, you know what? Because she was like, when she came in, she's like, I'm going to die just like my mom didn't hear. And then she's like, it's my mom's death day and I'm leaving. Mom, I did it. We're out. I'm going to cry. It's May, guys. It's not my month. Then she was taken along the Thames to Richmond Palace, which was then owned by Anne of Cleves. I don't know if Anne of Cleves was there, but it was Anne of Cleves' house. So, but she had multiple, you know, so could have been at one of the other ones. To Bedingfield's dismay, so the guy who's in charge of her jailer, he's not actually her jailer, though. One time she screamed jailer at him, and he was like, don't call me that, I'm not your jailer. Yeah, she was not always the nicest when she was in his care to him. But he was kind of mad because it soon became apparent that what they had planned as the discreet transfer of a prisoner from one place to another had turned into a triumphal progress. So, like, everywhere they go, there's massive crowds that are turning out to be like, we love you, Elizabeth. We believe you're innocent. You're so awesome. And she's like, okay, I like this. At last, she's vain. Like, there's no denying that. Her mother was pretty vain. Her dad was obsessed with himself. It was inherited. Low key. At last, they arrived at Woodstock, where even there was a group of well-wishers that met them at the gates. Oh my god. Luckily, this guy's pretty, like, chill, like, nice, so he doesn't do anything to her, too. Because there would be some people that'd be like, no. Got them to come here. Whack. Once they were set up, Bedingfield followed all the rules that Mary had set out for Elizabeth very strictly, but he still treated her with respect and courteousness. Like, he was still really, you know, nice to her with everything taken into consideration. Before long, Elizabeth did realize that she was not going to be murdered and that her life was not in danger. This fear, however, was replaced by boredom and frustration, and she decided that she was going to use that by annoying Sir Henry. She took pleasure in baiting him or by being deliberately awkward. I don't know what that means. I feel like it's just, like, embarrassing him. She couldn't bear being imprisoned, and she chafed at her restrictions because she felt her imprisonment was entirely undeserved. Basically, she's just, like, a pain in the butt to watch. She's 21, you know, she's supposed to be at university if she was now. So, like, university kids do things like that. But now Elizabeth and Courtenay are both in safe custody, and the memory of Wyatt's rebellion is receding into the past. So the kingdom became relatively peaceful, and Mary began to hope for news of Philip's arrival. It seemed that nothing now would prevent their union. And then he came, and they met, and everything seemed okay. And now we're at the exact same spot that we left you last time. And that's the end of this episode.
Dang.
The and that was a doozy, you guys. Yeah, I actually had to like work to research this one, so yeah, that was fine. Now I have American history all week. It's not the same. It's fine. Miss Matchett is like the best. I actually need to like pick my topic for my essay. But I think I already got it. Ooh, who emailed me? No one. No one emailed me, guys. No one is talking to me. So you should. There's several things that you need to go do right now. You should go follow us on any of our social media platforms if you aren't already. We are on Twitter at @bloody_not, but you will not find anything happening there. You can still follow us, though. That would be nice. You can follow us on Instagram at @notsobloodymary_podcast, where I post random memes about once a week because I don't pay attention to Instagram. But we've gotten a lot of new Instagram followers recently, like with all things considered. So if you're listening to this now, welcome. Hi. Thanks for following us on Instagram. You should go follow us on TikTok, @notsobloodymary_podcast. I try to post there once a day. Yeah. So that's fun. Then there's also less TikToks for me to force Grace to watch when I see her again, which, you know, is good. You should go follow Grace on TikTok @thelovely_bookworm so that you can comment weird cryptic things on all of her posts like I do. Yeah. You should do those things. And you should, Grace, what are they going to do today?
I think you should go hug someone if it's safe. Because of COVID, if they're, like, in your household, go hug someone.
Yeah.
If you can't hug anyone because of COVID, hug yourself.
Preferably, you go hug your mom if, like, you know, that's an option for you.
Yeah.
Since we are recording this on Mother's Day, yes. I'm going to go hug my mom when we end this. Yeah. So, like, that has been our episode on the White Rebellion and Elizabeth and Mary fighting a lot. They just needed to calm down. They need Taylor Swift to play her song for them. I feel like Mary would hate Taylor Swift.
Probably would.
I think Mary has a lot of internalized misogyny.
Yeah.
And I feel like Elizabeth would like it. Maybe. But only some of it. I feel like she'd like be really annoying sometimes. Anyways. Yeah. Happy May.
Yeah.
RIP. Yeah, we're going to be posting a lot on our social media accounts about May soon because Quinn runs them. And yeah, it's just going to happen. Yeah, so have a good day or week or night or evening.
Whatever it is for you.
Whatever it is for you. And if it is past 1 a.m, please go to bed.
We love you.
You got to sleep, guys. Sometimes you just gotta do it. Oh, okay. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Hugs and kisses. Bye.